whole point of the SLIM mission is to have this pinpoint landing. This is more of an engineering testing rather than scientific exploration.
Hey, Space Watchers, this is Space Cafe Radio, your channel about trends, awesome events, and interesting people in the space sector. Japan landed on the moon. Who did not follow the breathtaking landing with its minutes, very long minutes of silence? I'm very honored to have Professor Kazuto Suzuki in our show today. Kazuto Suzuki is professor at the Graduate School of Public Policy at the University of Tokyo, Japan, and director of the Institute of Geoeconomics at the International House of Japan. He currently serves many advisory committees of the Government of Japan, inter alia the National Space Policy Committee of the Cabinet Office at the Government of Japan. His research focuses on the conjunction of science, technology, and international relations, subjects including space policy, non-proliferation, export control, and sanctions. His recent work includes space and international politics and many others. Professor Suzuki shared with me many details about the mission and about the future of Japan's space ambitions. I'm Thorsten, publisher of Spacewatch.global. Lean back and enjoy this very unique episode. Professor Suzuki, it's a great pleasure to have you back in our Space Cafe Radio this time. And first of all, let me congratulate you and Japan, everyone involved with the SLIM mission, to become the fifth country to land on the moon. Can you give us a summary of what happened in those last few exciting, breathtaking minutes?
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you very much, Tristan, for the congratulatory message. Yes, we are happy to see the fortunate landing of the SLIM. The SLIM took about 2 months to reach to the moon orbit and then slowly descend to the moon surface. And the whole point of the SLIM was to have a what we call the pinpoint landing, which is in English, it's dubbed as a space sniper, to land on a targeted position so that it will have an autonomous landing capabilities for the places of your choice. The SLIM has a new technology to land and to have a sort of a double Dutch landing. So they are first landing on the two legs and then fall down like this so that it will have, even if there is a rough surface on the moon, it can be used as a sort of an opportunity to land, not seeking the flat surface. Unfortunately, while descending, one of the thrusters have failed, so that the position of the spacecraft has just turned around and flipped upside down. So there was a very close failure, but fortunately it landed upside down and it didn't do the double Dutch. It just did the first land. So the spacecraft, the SLIM, was standing like this and facing it was supposed to land like flat so that all the solar panels was on the, let's say, the backside of the spacecraft so that it will get all sunlight from all directions. But because it stands, the solar panel was facing towards west, so we needed to wait for the sun is going towards the west. Of course, the sun sets into the west on the moon, but the problem was that the day of the moon is about a month. So It took quite a while, about a week, to wait for the sun to come to the western side of the spacecraft, and then finally we get the sufficient sunlight onto the solar panel, and we were able to do certain missions, although it's not perfect, but we were able to monitor and capture the images of the moon surface. Also, SLIM had two robots, which is separated before landing, so it was called the LEV-1 and LEV-2, LEV-1, LEV-2, which is also dubbed as a Solar Cube, which is created by the toy company. LEV 1 and 2 are like a ball. It's like a size of the basketball, and it can separate from the center, and the two sides of the ball becomes as a wheel so that it can move on the moon surface. and it has a camera, and it took the picture of the slim, which is standing upside down and facing towards the west. It was a really exciting moment to see the picture of the spacecraft from outside, from this Soraku or LEV-1, and to see the picture, which is very sharp and very clear images. We know exactly the position and the posture of the spacecraft so that we'll be able to reprogram our mission. And then SIM was able to do certain jobs to monitor and taking pictures of the moon surface.
I see. You landed SLIM on the lunar morning, so in the the sun came from the east, and then due to the wrong positioning, you could not catch the sun. But that means that the solar panels didn't have a malfunction, it was just not correct position.
Is that exactly?
Okay. You, with all the right, consider the SLIM landing as a success. Can you tell us what you have achieved and what will comes up next?
I think the SLIM was not designed to go beyond the one lunar night. So the whole point of the SLIM mission is to have this pinpoint landing. This is more of an engineering testing rather than the scientific exploration. It was also using this LEV-1, LEV-2 as the sort of a smaller module as the lander and the rover in the sort of a very simplified rover, but those are the missions. So I think if the next lunar day comes in and the sun tilts towards the west, I suspect that SLIM will not reboot it because it was not designed to go over the lunar night, because the lunar night is going to be very low temperature, and I think the machines are not designed to withstand of the cold temperature. I think that this is an engineering testing process to further having bigger landers on moon with a similar landing technology, so that we'll be able to continue doing this pinpoint landing, and that we can land anywhere we want. So once we get this Artemis program going, we would have a shuttle between the lunar gateway and the lunar surface. This pinpoint landing technology will be useful when it comes to this shuttle mission between the moon surface and the moon gateway. So that's the sort of an idea of testing this SLIM. And of course, Japan wanted to be the fifth country being successful on landing. And also, we wanted to do this soft landing in a way that we would be able to deliver our rovers or any type of vehicles that comes with for the further exploration. So SLIM was designed for that. And therefore, I think we are not thinking of the sort of an extension of this SLIM mission, but we would use all the experiences that we had through this landing processes and the landing technologies. Watch out for this space. There will be another lunar mission coming, and we are getting ready for the Artemis program.
Okay, so you're planning for another mission before Artemis then? Is that what I understood right?
Yes. Technically, I think we don't really have this concrete planning, but there are one which is already on the pipeline is the collaboration with India. LunarPex is another lunar mission that next up with a collaboration with India, and this will also use some technologies that has been used for the SLIM, but it will have a further bigger rover on the lander. This is something that is coming up.
Geopolitical speaking, it is at the moment a very interesting time, I would say. For you, for Japan, it was a great success. What do you think Japan achieved in terms of the geopolitical equilibrium?
As for Japan, we are not trying to, let's say, beat Chinese or beat Americans, or we are not trying to be on the right in space. What we are trying to do is to have a capabilities to participate in the Artemis program or to promote the bilateral collaboration with India or Europe. If you compare to the moon landing of the Chandrayaan in India, the Indians had this the computer graphic, and they had this landing synchronized with telemetry. And they do have this very funny moment that you have the Prime Minister Modi on the one side, and then you have the computer graphic on the other side. And everyone was shouting and cheering and everything. In Japan, we didn't do that. There is no Prime Minister's face on the one side. It was just simply a telemetry. We were just guessing that it was landed, but it wasn't really convincing because the power generation didn't start. So everyone was so sad. All the faces after the landing, it took about 2-3 hours to make sure that they are checking all this malfunctioning or what happened on the spacecraft and try to figure out the problem of the solar panel. And then they came out for the press briefing, and then everyone, including Yamakawa-san, the president of JAXA, looked so sad and anxious, and there was no cheer, no smile, no shouting at all. This is the difference. The Indians, this was a national pride. It was an achievement. And even in case of SLAM, it was not exactly 100% success, but still Indians are cheering up. But in Japan, not a single person is smiling if it's not 100%. That's a reflection of how we see this lunar mission. We are not doing that for the national pride or beating others or being a fifth nation on the world. Or that's not the kind of things that we are trying to achieve. What we are trying to achieve is that we were able to do whatever we wanted to do. We wanted to build our capacity. We wanted to build our autonomous capabilities. It's not racing with someone or beating someone. It's not the competition. It's our desire to go to moon and to make sure that we achieve what we want to achieve. We were fifth country of landing on the moon. That's a fact. But for those people working in JAXA is not aiming for being on top of anybody or being ahead of somebody. That's not what we are trying to do. And that face of the press briefing tells you that this is not a geopolitical competition. This is our simply engineering and scientific mission. Of course, it changes the picture. Japan, as one of the members of the Artemis program, I think we are adding more weight on the success of the Artemis program. And of course, the Artemis program is somewhat equivalent to the International Lunar Research Station, which are planning to proceed with China and Russia. So I think geopolitically speaking, Japan has made it to expand the possibility that the Americans and the Western countries that we are collaborating with to be capable of doing more things on the moon. And of course, at the end of the day, the holy grail of the lunar mission is finding a water. This precision landing is exactly what we need for having more effective exploration missions on the polar region of the moon. So I think this is a very strong addition to the Western countries. And of course, Japan is working on finding water on the moon. This would give the Japan a sort of a cutting edge for technology for finding the more likely place to find water. This would give us a huge advantage for exploration of the moon resources.
We had the pleasure to have our Space Cafe 33 Minutes in June 21 already, after you released the new Japanese space policy. So what happened in the space sector in Japan over the last 2.5 years?
We have done so many things in terms of exploration. We have done this lunar mission. We have the return of Hayabusa 2. And exploration side, we are doing not exactly the sort of a grandiose things, but these are the sort of a smaller steps, but we are having those steps. Unfortunately, we had a failure of H3 launcher, and the H3 will be launched next week in 15th of February. And if this will be successful, and I hope that this will be a successful one, this H3 will be the main workhorse launcher for a variety of missions, including the MMX, which is to have a sample return from Phobos, the satellite of Mars. So this will be another huge gain for Japan to do this sample return missions. Of course, Phobos has a much stronger gravity, so it will be much harder mission to do the sample return, not like an asteroid that you just go and touch down and leave. This is another exciting moment that we are waiting to see, but we need to have an H3 to be available for the MMX. Apart from that, we are doing a lot of things. The ADRAS-J, this is astroscale satellite to monitor debris, to detect the size and the shape and the rotation of the debris that you are trying to capture. So astroscale is using this ADRAS-J as the sort of a monitoring device so that they can plan how to capture the rotating debris.
That is a second stage rocket body, isn't it?
Yeah, second stage rocket body will be removed by the mission called the CRD-2. Before the CRD-2 is launched, we need to have the ADRAS-J to monitor this second stage of rocket to make sure that the size and shape and rotation of the debris. So this is another thing. And with regard to that, it is interesting that the Japanese government has issued a guideline for astroscale to be licensed to do this monitoring and the removing debris, because there is always a suspicion that the active debris removal technology can be used as a space weapon. The Japanese government has issued the legal document that requires astroscale to provide all necessary information to announce position on the orbit and their missions and how, when they move from one orbit to another, so that they will do no harm to other satellites. And astroscale is required to announce all the operators of satellite on the same orbital plane. This is one way of Japan to contribute to build up the space traffic management. So this is something that we have done in the last 2.5 years. Another thing which is coming up, we have drafted something called a space technology strategy. So this is the document. I was happy to be involved in the both guideline of the orbital services and the space technology strategy. This strategy paper is documented that where the Japanese technological R&D goes, and JAXA, the government is given JAXA a very substantial amount of money, which is about 300 billion yen, which is somewhat in the region of the 2 billion US dollars to support the Japanese industry to develop the technology based on this technological strategy. So this is another thing that we are working on. And in terms of the budgetary processes from the 3 years ago, the budget proposal for the financial year of 2024 is more than doubled. 3 years ago, we had this in Japanese currency. It was about 400 billion yen, but now it's coming up to the level of the 800 billion yen. So it's almost doubled in the last 3 years. So the Japanese space budget is increasing, and among the 400 billion increase, the 300 billion is focusing on this new technological development and commercialization or industrialization of the Japanese space industry. Japan is paying so much on the industrialization and try to build up space capabilities for not only the commercial space, but also the security space, because Japan is living in a very rough neighborhood, having Russia, North Korea, China in the neighbor. So we need to build up the space capabilities for the missile detection and all the surveillance technologies. And also, we are very serious about the space debris issue, so that the space domain awareness satellite will be launched under the funding of the Ministry of Defense. So there is a lot of things going on in Japan, and this is a very exciting moment for Japan and Japanese space community to engage into a new activities.
Absolutely. It sounds so. It's a great moment to live with all the obstacles that we have at the moment. Let me come back with the last question to you about the peaceful use of outer space or on the moon. How will Japan balance its collaboration with the US for the Artemis Accords, what you are a signatory of, and its own national goals? So how do you balance that? SLIM was obviously a national demonstrator, not under the Artemis Accords. And you mentioned before that maybe for the shuttle service from the gateway to the lunar base, there's this kind of precision landing algorithm technology needed. Mm-hmm. But how do you balance that?
From a Japanese point of view, Artemis program or Artemis Accord, these are two separate things. But Artemis program is a vehicle for the Japan to achieve what it wants to do. And the ultimate goal for Japan is to send the Japanese astronauts on the moon. So we think that Artemis program is a stepping stone for Japan to achieve that goal to send the Japanese astronauts on the moon. And this will be the sort of political objective for Japan to be part of Artemis Accord and the Artemis program. Artemis Accord is a political agreement on how to play on the moon. And I think it is also very important because this will provide the playbook for what you can do, what you should not do on the moon, and especially in the competitive domain, particularly with U.S., China, or U.S., Russia rivalry. I think this Artemis Accord will be the sort of baseline for the governance of lunar surface and lunar exploration, including the lunar resources. I think this will be our interest to set up the rules on the moon so that our interest will be protected. You know, let's assume that if Japan finds water on the moon, Japan is the fourth country to set up the law for the space resources. So after Luxembourg, UAE, United States, Japan is the fourth, and we are protecting the interest of those who are finding the resources on the moon. It's a legally binding rules so that these rule-based exploration is of the interest of Japan. And I think the collaboration with the United States is important because we don't have the sufficient capabilities for the transportation. We depend on the U.S. capabilities of transporting the astronauts and all the landers to the moon and building up the gateway. This will also require the transportation capabilities. That is all done by the United States. I think if we don't participate in the Artemis program, we are not able to join the Gateway program, and we cannot use the Gateway as the vehicle for the lunar landing. And at the end of the day, we are expecting that we'll be able to send astronauts to the Gateway, and then from there, we'll have Japanese astronauts landing on the moon.
You mentioned the Space Resources Law. Is that in the making, or is that ratified already?
It's already established.
Okay, just to clarify that. Correct me if I'm wrong, there have been plans for your own Japanese lunar base in the last years. Are these gone or are they still on the horizon, or is that full Artemis now under the collaboration with all the other participants in the program?
Yeah, there are a lot of plans and scenario and what we do next after the landing on the moon. There are scientific community has proposed to build the lunar telescope, setting up the electromagnetic telescope on the far side of the moon. And also there are plans for the lunar base. There are ideas of the lunar village. Those are proposed by ESA at one point. The moon village was another idea. The iSpace, which is the private company for moon exploration, iSpace has the vision of having a 500-person community on the moon. So there are a lot of things, but these are beyond Artemis. First, realistically, we need to prepare and produce things for the Artemis program, and then we'll have this vision to be realized. So it's not on the horizon, but it's somewhere in the mist beyond the Artemis. But we are currently focusing on the Artemis program and landing Japanese astronauts on the moon. Let's say in a marathon, it's about the 10 kilometer gateway, but we'll have another objective afterwards, including the lunar base or lunar village or whatever that, but these are not decided. It's still beyond the horizon.
Professor Tsutsuki, thank you very much for your time and this interview. I wish you all the best, and we will follow Japanese space activities very closely. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If you have further questions, reach out to us at radio@spacewatch.global. If you like these or other episodes of Space Cafe Radio, leave us a rating on your preferred podcast platform. It is the currency of today. And if you want to stay on the pulse of the space industry, please visit our website at www.spacewatch.global and subscribe to our newsletters. And of course, don't forget to become a Space Watcher. I'm Thorsten Kreening, publisher at spacewatch.global, your independent perspective on space.